If it's Saturday, it's the Bro Show, brought to you by the Animal Legal Defense Fund and available free at www.bro.show. So pull up your socks, buckle your seatbelt, and don't forget to take your meds.
John, you like games, don't you?
Boy, do I ever. In fact, my interest in games was enhanced by an experience I had this last week when I was on an independent bookstore crawl, and I made it to my 11th bookstore, and the name of that store was Goblin Market. And it's actually more than a bookstore. It's got comic books, it's got games, it's got books on a variety of topics that are a little unusual, such as sci-fi, fantasy, and also horror creatures. And sure enough, I said to them, do you have anything on werewolves? And their response is, do we have stuff on werewolves? And there I found a game. And actually, the game, what really piqued my interest was and here's the guidebook. Here's the reference book, 300 pages long. And the name of the game is Werewolf the Apocalypse. Werewolf the Apocalypse.
Wow.
It's a role-playing game. In fact, I learned the acronym role-playing game, RPG. That's what it is.
You're moving up.
So I'm learning a lot. I'm not only learning a game, but I'm learning a new acronym. So the basic premise of this game is that the player characters are werewolves who have gone some training, and what they do is they advance and work together on these missions to basically save the world. And the werewolves are guided by a grandmaster who provides them information to get a storyline started and keep it moving, plus guidelines on the werewolf character creation and the conditions. Now, where does this game take place? It takes place in a fictional contemporary world where werewolves and other legendary creatures secretly live right beside the humans. So the humans can't see them. They're outside the public eye. And they do these wonderful things to keep the world from becoming apocalyptic.
Eating bad guys is wonderful. I guess it is, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. Particularly when you can get away with it. So I'm just going to say one more thing before I hand it over to a better source with respect to the RPG. And I'll just, I was concerned, well, how popular is this game? Well, it's kind of met the test of time because it started back in the early 1990s. It was it's a board game. It's not like one that's, computer generated, internet and all that stuff. Although it does have some of those features recently. So it's in its fifth edition. And to me, the most important thing was there was a survey conducted of the 50 most popular role-playing games, and Werewolf the Apocalypse was ranked 33rd, which is pretty good. I mean, it's got a strong legion of fans out there. So I think, I want to give a shout out to the staff that led me through this. And I think maybe I might have some opportunities in the future as it relates to werewolf topics we can use for the show.
That'll work.
Yeah, maybe, because, I'm a novice at this stuff with RPG and particularly with this game. And maybe you could enlighten me a bit as to how this works.
Well, I myself am not a game person of any kind, even card games. It just is something I just don't have in me. But I'm surrounded by people who love games of all kinds. And, Rose, Mary Jane, Joe, Sarah, all these people are really into games. And the one person of all those people I just named who's really super into it and was super helpful on this segment was Sarah Reichel down there in Australia. Right. She really loves RPG. She plays a different kind of RPG. She plays World of Warcraft with her entire family. And they are all really into it, and they do all kinds of interesting things together with these games. So she looked into this for both of us and gave us both a lot of notes on this and how it works. And this is not a typical RPG game in that, like John said, it's more of a board game, and one player plays at a time. So it's not a simultaneous multiplayer game like World of Warcraft would be. Also, until just recently, 2019, it went online. But before that, it wasn't. And so, you know, and they renamed it. I think it's World War Class, Werewolf, the Apocalypse, Earthblood or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. I'll tell you, I thought it was really good that Sarah actually, after reading some of the notes that she gave both of us, increased my comfort level, because when I first saw this and I saw that book, they were so interested at the bookstore. I said, yeah, I don't know if I can handle this, but Sarah got me, you know, gave me some comfort as I read her notes. That was cool. So
she's a very helpful person in general, but when it comes to RPG, computer programming, anything technical, she's a whiz, and she genuinely enjoys helping people. So she was great for us. Okay, one of the things that I think we learned from her is that some of these games are so complex that in order to play it, you have to have some experienced game players with you to do it. And this is not one of those games. She said that the thing she liked about this game was that novices can pick up the book, and the book, the world, you know, the storybook, essentially,
it's a
book of scenarios that your players can play. You roll dice to advance in the game. This happens, that happens. As you say, a grandmaster kind of calls a shot, but he's working from the book, or she's working from the book. And this game, the thing that makes it unique, a little bit unique, and makes it rate so highly is the stories are so good. So if you're a story-oriented RPG person, you're going to love this. And that's why it's number 33 out of all of these. And the cool thing is it's taken something that we learned earlier in our talks about werewolves, like with poor old Larry Talbot. You know, he felt cursed and he just wanted to die, you know, and it was just awful and terrible. And it's no fun being a werewolf. You can kill the people you love, etc. Well, it's not like that in here. This world is completely different. These werewolves called gurus, not like G-U-R-U, like the people gurus, but like it's spelled G-O-U-R-U. So anyway, these guys, they are undercover, like John said. And they go around and they knock off the bad guys.
Right.
And they fight the evil spirits that are possessing people and all this stuff. So they do good. They are like the garbage collectors of the universe. And it's kind of neat. I kind of liked it. I thought it was great. This is a good idea. And it adds virtue to something that seemed unvirtuous and even unholy. Right.
It finds the positiveness in the affliction that the werewolf has to make it for society, humanity, etc. You know, me being an outcomes guy, had to say, well, how do you win? I mean, come on, I want to find out how I can become.
That's
a
it,
winner.
John. Bottom line.
I'm a bottom line guy, and this is what your mindset has to be. Look, this is a collective effort, and it's the journey. It's the excitement that you build in the game. And what you find interesting as you sort of say, well, as you move on and you want to, you know, say, well, you want to move on. It isn't like, well, let's get this game over with. No, you just feel excited that it continues. And I think that that's where the game is. And that's what makes it popular. So it's all good. That's for sure. Boy, do I have a word for this week. Cul-de-sac. Now, that's actually with dashes in it. Let's make that clear. C-U-L-D-E-S-A-C, cul-de-sac.
See, I didn't know that. Huh.
Yeah, so that's the way it's in the dictionary. That was kind of a new thing for me, too. So what is that?
Interesting.
It's a street lane, a street or a lane closed at the end. So it's sort of a dead-end street. And you're saying, well, why did I come up with this word? Well, I kind of was wondering. We have a topic that we'll get into in a little while. And I wanted to know how that connects with this actual general word in the dictionary. So here is my example. Cul-de-sac, without the dashes. A community in Tempe, Arizona, got its name from the French term cul-de-sac with the dashes. It refers to its layout of this community, where streets are in a circular loop, creating a sense of community, and therefore there is no way out in terms of you go around and around.
And no through traffic, yeah.
No through traffic is the bottom line. So how did I get this? Well, I kind of cheated a little bit. I asked ChatGPT. I asked the question. I did. And so as a result, AI at work here for me. How did cul-de-sac, the community in Tempe, Arizona, get its name? And that's the example I came up with. So
I've got a surprise for you.
I need a surprise.
So, you know, we gave Sarah a shout out last segment, but I should point out she's a multi-purpose utility player on our team. And she also helped me out with this word, John.
Let's hear it.
She speaks French.
Oh, good.
You'll never believe what this word means. Well, sack means bag. Cul-de-sac is, believe it or not, the ass end of a bag.
I love it.
Okay. That's thank you, Sarah.
Hey, I need that insight. Very good. Boy, do I have a topic this week. And the fact is that the two takes was something that's been on the back burner, but it just finally came to the forefront with a couple more articles that I read. And it's called Welcome to Cul-de-sac, a car-free neighborhood built in a metropolitan area.
Wait a minute. I've heard that word before. Where did I hear it?
It was the word, cul-de-sac. Wow. And I want to give a shout out to, this is a community located in Tempe, Arizona, which is an adjacent suburb to Phoenix, Arizona. But just imagine where the first car-free neighborhood built from scratch would be. And what city? Well, usually you think in terms of cities like New York, Boston, San Francisco. A little expensive in those, maybe go Oakland, Portland, you know, the weather's pretty good there. But think again, because I'll tell you, the last place you would figure this car-free neighborhood would be built would be Phoenix, Arizona, a sprawling city in a brutal desert environment. It is often called the least sustainable city, and surely not a walk-friendly or a bike-friendly place to be. But when you think about it, such a city has a great population for which this car-free community would be comfortable, because they're fed up with a lot of these people with the being car dependent and all the pollution that in the valley of Phoenix, and they want to do what they can to help and also lead lives which they feel will have a little more quality. So it happened. This is not an imagination. This is not a dream. This isn't something it exists. And back in 2019, they started the construction of this community in Tempe. And I'm familiar because I go to Arizona at least once a year for, you know, baseball and all that good stuff. 17-acre property. And it was given the name cul-de-sac. And it's a property that its capacity is eventually going to be 600-plus apartment units. And it is apartments rather than being like you buy them. With the anticipated capacity, resident-wise, of about 1,400. So far, they're about a third of the way there in terms of construction. They've got a third of it, and they've pretty well, I would say, about 85-90% occupied as it relates to what's been done, the 200-250. So,
gotcha.
You know, what's nice about it is because they don't have cars. They have a lot of open space, and the open space is, you know, gives them a lot of landscaping, shaded areas, et cetera. And,
breezes.
You know, you can get studio, you can get three bedrooms. So it's got a fair number of different sizes you can get. And I don't want to necessarily throw out the numbers with the rent, but when I took a look at it, I was pretty surprised for a city that it was, I thought, very reasonable. Short, you know, shared courtyards where you can do barbecue pits. It's got within the 16 acres, you got bike paths, foot paths, and it's got a retail component because, you know, you're not going to want to go out and about to do all your shopping. So you got yourself a restaurant, you've got which is sort of American barbecue, et cetera, but a variety of things. And of course, what I would call like an urban grocery store, which means it's fairly small, but it has a lot of, you know, you can actually order in, you can order prepared food and, you know, go there and get it, et cetera. So you don't have to necessarily cook. clothing shop, yoga, and the most critical piece it's got a bike shop. Because you're not, you don't have a car, so you're going to have to find other means of transportation. The amenity area includes, you know, fitness center, etc. Got a swimming pool, dog park, sounding pretty good. But the key to this exercise is to get away from the car dependency. So they do that, providing with some interesting things. Phoenix does have light rail, and I've been on the light rail quite often. In fact, I've actually taken the light rail right by this spot. And there, it's called Metro, and it takes you, and the Metro stop is right across the street from here. I mean, it's got the, you don't jaywalk or anything. You've got a pathway on the street to make it happen. And it'll take you to the airport. It'll take you to downtown Phoenix. And it's about two or three stops away from Tempe. And Tempe is where the Arizona State University is located. So it's got a lot of things in a downtown area it's pretty active. So you can go hard to do that. You got 15% off Lyft rides. You can use a car sharing service. You can e-scooters. You also got a lot of places to park your bike. And I think the funny thing is, and I ran into this, they've got also, you can get limited free and discounted rides on an autonomous rail, a ride hailing service, which is, you know, they're actually, this service, I've seen it work and it's scary. When you see a car go by you and there's a person in the back seat and there's no driver. It's called Waymo. Yeah. It's pretty there. It's popular there. And also I think in San Francisco too. A couple other things I want to mention is Night Market. It's got a weekly night market. Now, some of these people, a lot of these people that live here are burgeoning entrepreneurs, and they are starting businesses and they've got product. So what you can do is you can basically, you know how you have a flea market or you have a farmer's market? Well, they've got that once a week there so that these people plus others from outside can come and they can sell their wares, this, et cetera. Now, you're going to say, wait a minute. We know what happened last summer when it comes to Phoenix. I mean, we're talking brutal temperatures.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do about that?
I don't know.
Well, first thing is that they've kind of done a little with respect to the architecture and the way that it's all laid out. It's sort of like a European community where the streetway, the narrow pathways between the buildings leave a lot of shaded area. The buildings are actually a very bright color, which reflects the sun rather than you know, absorbing it. And the key thing is 0% asphalt. In other words, asphalt, concrete, all that stuff. Now, this isn't going to mean that you're going to get up in July and August and say, gee, I can hardly wait to get out there at noon so I can get the top temperature, you know. But it does give you, they say, when it might be 120, you know, outside, you know, in regular areas, it's probably going to be more in the mid 90s here. Now, you know, we could say
that's a big discount.
Yes, it is. And I know, and I'm not going to overdo the thing, but we know that 90 degrees in Phoenix is a lot different than 90 degrees in St. Louis or Florida. I mean, humidity in Arizona is a lot less. So I figure that's pretty cool. Hey, you know what? I called up the sales rep, Emily.
Yeah,
and
that's
she was very helpful. And since I go there all the time, to Phoenix, there were some things I just wanted to kind of know a little bit more. This is more for very active people. So we're talking, you know, the age isn't going to necessarily make as big a difference. And keep in mind, it is rented. So which I think fits it very well.
Well, you could spend the night there, though, couldn't you? They have like overnight rooms.
That's it. Particularly now that for guests, they have overnight rooms. And now that they're actually in the process of trying to sell out the first portion of it, they've got some rooms that you could actually, they have like a hoteling a little bit too, where you can come in for one night, three nights, 30 days, et cetera. So that's there right now. And their objective, of course, is just to have a few guest rooms. Or when you want to have somebody visit you and have them stay within the area. I don't want to get too much into the specifics as to with the demographics, but I think that my sense is that they probably have a few snowbirds. Those are people that like to come down and spend a full maybe 6 months down in Arizona, but maybe live in places, you know, further in north. So that might, this could be a winter place where you maybe want to stay between October and yeah, you know, like March, May, et cetera. And that's pretty good too. And I was kind of interested, well, they, you know, it's rent. So that means you better have a very good maintenance crew. And they seem to have that. And it's for emergency, they're 24/7. So that's good too. Hey, what are we going to do about when you want to deliver a pizza? Or what are we going to do with respect to your mail?
Yeah.
Well, I live in an apartment building, so I know a little bit about some of the problems or challenges that places upon a building or community. They have an electronic room, electronic access, so you can go in, get your mail. It's where all the packages will be dropped off. They're all kind of squared away and they're where they should be. And in addition to that, let's say that you order something from like Omaha Steaks that has to be cold. They have a refrigerated spot within that area for you, which is really nice too.
I'll take a steak.
So, I'll take a steak. So, I mean, I think it's really cool. And I have to be truthful.
Nice.
I'm going to take a little bigger look at it when I get down there the next time back in October.
Are you going to hook up with Emily? That's what's really going on here, I think.
Well, she did sound pretty interesting. That's all I got to say.
Okay. I can say no more. Okay. All right. John, I think we need some groaners.
Yes, and our groaners are provided to us by Vincent Anthony Lauder Jr., commonly referred to as the coach.
The coach.
And here is the first groaner. What do you call the lamp on King Arthur's round table? What do you call the lamp on King Arthur's round table?
Lamp-a-lot.
That's good. A Lamp-a-lot. That's you got a very good name there. They call it Night Light.
Okay, all right. That's even better. I like
you took a little extreme there, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the last one. What was the sentence imposed on a thief who stole a calendar? What was the sentence imposed on a thief who stole a calendar?
Well, I don't know, John.
He got 12 months. That's pretty sick.
Right in front of me. I didn't even see it. Okay, all right.
Oh, all good. We've done another bullshit with this.